Chapter 52. Need. For a moment, Nynaeve stood in the heart of the stone, not seeing it, not thinking of Tel Iron Riad at all. Egyanin was Seanchan, one of those vile people who had put a collar on Egwene's neck and tried to put one on hers. Knowing it still made her feel hollow. Seanchan, and she had snaked her way into Nynaeve's affections. True friends had seemed so few and far between since leaving Emmonsfield. To find a new one, then lose her in this way. "I hate her for that, worst of all," she growled, folding her arms tightly. "She made me like her, and I cannot stop, and I hate her for it." Said aloud, it made no sense at all. "I do not have to make sense." She laughed quietly with a rueful shake of her head. "I am supposed to be Aes Sedai, but not to be wool-gathering like a fool girl." Kalandor sparkled, the crystal sword rising out of the floor stones beneath the great dome, and the massive red stone columns ran off in shadowed rows through that odd dim light that came from everywhere. Easy to remember the feel of being watched, to imagine it again. If it had been imagination before, if it was now, anything might be hiding back in there. A good stout stick appeared in her hands as she peered among the columns. Where was Egwene? Just like the girl to keep her waiting. All that murkiness. For all she knew, something could be about to jump out at. "That is an odd dress, Nynaeve." Just stifling a yelp, she spun around heavily, rattling metallically, heart thumping in her throat. Egwene stood on the other side of Kalandor with two women in bulky skirts and dark shawls over white blouses, snowy hair held by folded scarves falling to their waists. Nynaeve swallowed, hoping none of them noticed, tried to make herself breathe normally again, sneaking up on her that way. One of the Aiel women she knew from Elaine's description. Amice's face was much too young for such hair, but apparently it had been almost silver even as a child. The other, thin and bony, had pale blue eyes in a leathery wrinkled face. That must be Bear. The tougher of the two, in Nynaeve's opinion, now that she saw them, not that this Amice looked very odd dress. "I rattled!" Staring down at herself, she gasped. Her dress looked vaguely like a Two Rivers garment, if Two Rivers women wore dresses fashioned from steel mail, with pieces of plate armor like those she had seen in Shinar. How did men run about and jump into saddles in these things? It dragged at her shoulders as if it weighed 100 pounds. The good stick was metal now, and spiked at the end like a shiny steel sand burr. Without touching her head, she knew she had on some sort of helmet. Blushing furiously, she concentrated, changed it all to good Two Rivers woolens and a walking staff. It felt good to have her hair back in one proper braid, hanging over her shoulder. "Uncontrolled thoughts are troublesome when you walk the dream," Bear said in a thin, strong voice. "You must learn to control them if you mean to continue." "I can control my thoughts very well, thank you," Nynaeve said crisply. Bear's voice was not all that was thin. The two wise ones seemed misty almost, and Egwene, in a pale blue riding dress, was very nearly transparent. "What's the matter with you? Why do you look that way?" "You try entering Tel Iron Riad while half asleep in a saddle," Egwene said dryly. She seemed to flicker. "It is morning in the Threefold Land, and we are on the move. I had to talk Amice into letting me come at all, but I was afraid you would be worried." "It is a difficult enough task without the horse," Amice said, "sleeping shallowly when you wish to be awake. Egwene has not learned it entirely yet." "I will," Egwene said with an irritated determination. She was always too hasty and stubborn in her desire to learn. If these wise ones did not hold on to the scruff of her neck, she would very likely jump into all sorts of trouble. Nynaeve stopped worrying about Egwene and trouble as the younger woman began to speak of Trollocs and Dragkar attacking Koldrock's hold. Sianna, a wise one dreamwalker, among the dead. Rand, hurrying the Tardad Aiel toward this Alcair Dal, apparently in violation of all custom, sending out runners to bring more septs. The boy was confiding his intentions to no one. The Aiel were jumpy, and Moiraine was ready to bite the heads off nails. Moiraine's frustration would have been some relief. She had hoped he could escape that woman's influence somehow, if Egwene had not frowned so worriedly. "I don't know whether it is madness or design," Egwene finished. "I could almost bear it either way if I knew. Nynaeve, I'll admit it isn't prophecy or Tarman Gaiden that makes me anxious right now. Maybe it is foolish, but I promised Elaine to look after him, and I do not know how." Nynaeve walked around the crystal sword to put an arm around her. At least she felt solid, even if she did look a reflection in a foggy mirror. Rand's sanity. There was nothing she could do about that, no comfort she could offer. Egwene was the one there to see him. "The best you can do for Elaine is to tell him to read what she wrote. She worries about it sometimes. She won't talk, but I think she's afraid she said more than she should have. If he believes she is totally besotted, he's more likely to feel the same, which will not hurt her in the least. At least we have some good news in Tanchico. Some." When she explained, though, it barely seemed to justify some. "So you still don't know what it is they're after," Egwene said after she finished. "But even if you did, they are on top of it and still might find it first." "Not if I can help it." Nynaeve fixed the two wise ones with a firm, level look. From what Elaine said of Amice's reluctance to give anything but warnings, she would need firmness to deal with them. The pair was so hazy a strong puff might blow them away like fog. "Elaine thinks you know all sorts of tricks with dreams. Is there any way I could get into Amathera's dreams to see if she is a dark friend?" "Foolish girl." Bear's long hair swung as she shook her head. "If I Sedai, a foolish girl still. To step into another's dreams is very dangerous unless she knows you and expects you. It is her dream, not as here. There, this Amathera will control all, even you." She had been sure that was the way. It was irritating to learn differently. And foolish girl? "I am not a girl," she snapped. She wanted to yank her braid, but clenched a fist at her side instead. For some reason, pulling at her hair felt strangely uncomfortable of late. "I was Wisdom of Emmons Field before I became Aes Sedai." She hardly stumbled over the lie at all now. "And I told women as old as you when to sit down and be quiet. If you know how to help me, say so instead of giving me foolish maunderings about what is dangerous. I know danger when I see it." Abruptly, she realized her single braid had split in two, one over each ear, red ribbons woven through to make tassels on the ends. Her skirt was so short it showed her knees. She wore a loose white blouse like the wise ones, and her shoes and stockings were gone. Where had this come from? She'd surely never thought of wearing anything like it. Egwene put a hasty hand over her mouth. Was she aghast? Surely not smiling. "Uncontrolled thoughts," Amis said, "can be very troublesome indeed, Nynaeve Sedai, until you learn." Despite her bland tone, her lips quirked in barely masked amusement. Nynaeve kept her face smooth with an effort. They could not have had anything to do with it. They can't have. She struggled to change back, and it was a struggle, as though something held her as she was. Her cheeks grew hotter and hotter. Suddenly, just at the point when she was ready to break down and ask advice or even help, her clothes and hair were as they had been. She wriggled her toes gratefully in good stout shoes. It had just been some odd stray thought. In any case, she was not about to voice any suspicions. They looked far too amused as it was, even Egwene. "I am not here for some fool contest. I just won't dignify them." "If I cannot enter her dream, can I bring her into the world of dreams? I need some way to talk to her."
"We would not teach you that if we knew how," Amice said, hitching her shawl angrily. "It is an evil thing you ask, Nynaeve Sedai."
"She would be as helpless here as you in her dream." Bear's thin voice sounded like an iron rod.
It has been handed down among dreamwalkers since the first that no one must ever be brought into the dream. It is said that that was the way of the shadow in the last days of the Age of Legends. Nynaeve shifted her feet under those hard stairs. Realizing she had an arm around Egwene, she held still. She was not about to let Egwene think they had made her uneasy. Not that they had. If she thought of being hauled before the women's circle before she was chosen wisdom, it was nothing at all to do with the wise ones. Firmness was what was... They stared at her. Hazy or not, these women could duel Swan Sanche stare for stare, especially Bear. Not that they intimidated her, but she could see the point of being reasonable. Elaine and I need help. The Black Adja is sitting on top of something that can harm Rand. If they find it before we do, they may be able to control him. We need to find it first. If there is anything you can do to help, anything you can tell me, anything at all. Aes Sedai, Amys said. You can make a request for help sound a demand. Nynaeve's mouth tightened. Demand? She had all but begged. Demand, indeed? But the Aiel woman did not seem to notice, or chose to ignore it. Yet a danger to Randall Thor. We cannot allow the Shadow to have that. There is a way. Dangerous, Bear shook her head vigorously. This young woman knows less than Egwene did when she came to us. It is too dangerous for her. Then maybe I could, Egwene began, and the two cut her off as one. You are going to complete your training. You are too eager to go beyond what you know, Bear said sharply. At the same time, Amys said, not the slightest bit softer, You are not there in Tanchico. You do not know the place, and you cannot have Nynaeve's need. She is the hunter. Under those iron eyes, Egwene subsided sulkily, and the two wise ones looked at each other. Finally, Bear shrugged and lifted her shawl up around her face. Clearly, she washed her hands of the entire matter. It is dangerous, Amys said. They made it sound as if breathing was dangerous in Tel Iran Riad. Nynaeve cut off, as Amys's eyes actually grew harder. She would not have thought it possible. Keeping a firm image of her clothes as they were, of course they had had nothing to do with that. It simply seemed wise to make sure her dress remained as it was. She changed what she had been going to say. I will be careful. It is not possible, Amys told her flatly. But I do not know another way. Need is the key. When there are too many people for the hold, the sept must divide, and the need is for water at the new hold. If no location with water is known, one of us may be called to find one. The key then is the need for a proper valley or canyon not too far from the first with water. Concentrating on that need will bring you nearer to what you want. Concentrating on the need again will bring you closer. Each step brings you nearer, until at last you are not only in the valley but standing beside where water is to be found. It may be harder for you because you do not know exactly what you are seeking, though the depth of need may make up for it, and you know already in a rough fashion where it lies in this palace. The danger is this, and you must be aware of it. The wise one leaned toward her intently, driving her words home with a tone as sharp as her gaze. Each step is made blind, with eyes closed. You cannot know where you will be when you open your eyes. And finding the water does no good if you are standing in a den of vipers. The fangs of a mountain king kill as quickly in the dream as waking. I think these women Egwene speaks of will kill more quickly than the snake. I did that, Egwene exclaimed. Nynaeve felt her jump as the Aiel women's eyes went to her. Before I met you, she said hastily. Before we went to Tyr. Need. Nynaeve felt warmer toward the Aiel women now that one of them had given her something she could use. You must keep a close eye on Egwene, she told them, hugging the younger woman to show she meant it fondly. You are right, Bear. She will try to do more than she knows how. She has always been that way. For some reason, Bear arched a white eyebrow at her. I do not find her so, Amis said in a dry voice. She is a biddable student now. Is that not so, Egwene? Egwene's mouth set in a stubborn line. These wise ones did not know her well if they believed a Two Rivers woman would call herself biddable. On the other hand, she did not say anything. That was unexpected. As hard a lot as Aes Sedai, it appeared, these Aiel women. Her hour was slipping away, and impatience bubbled to try this method now. If Elaine woke her, it might take hours to get back to sleep. In 7 days, she said, one of us will meet you here again. Egwene nodded. In 7 days, Rand will have shown himself to the clan chiefs as he who comes with the dawn, and the Aiel will all be behind him. The wise one's eyes shifted slightly, and Amis adjusted her shawl. Egwene did not see it. The light knows what he means to do then. In 7 days, Nynaeve said, Elaine and I will have taken whatever Leandrin is hunting away from the lot of them. Or else, very likely, the Black Aja would have it. So the wise ones were not more certain the Aiel would follow Rand than Egwene was of his plans. No certainty anywhere, but no point in burdening Egwene with more doubts either. When one of us sees you next, we'll have laid them by the heels and stuffed them all in sacks to cart to the tower for trial. Try to be careful, Nynaeve. I know you don't know how to, but try anyway. Tell Elaine I said so, too. She isn't as bold as you are, but she can come close.
Amis and Bear each laid a hand on Egwene's shoulder, and they were gone.
Try to be careful, fool girl. She was always careful. What had Egwene been about to say, rather than bold? Nynaeve folded her arms tightly in lieu of pulling her braid. Maybe better she did not know. She realized she had not told Egwene about Aegyanin. Perhaps best not to stir up Egwene's memories of her captivity. Nynaeve could remember all too well the other woman's nightmares for weeks after she was freed, waking up screaming that she would not be chained. Much the best to let it lie. It was not as if Egwene need ever meet the Shan Chan woman. Burn that woman. Burn Aegyanin to ash. Burn her. This is not using my time wisely, she said aloud. The words echoed through the tall columns. With the other women gone, they looked even more foreboding than before, more a hiding place for unseen watchers and things that jumped out at you. Time to be away. First, though, she changed her hair to a tassel of long, narrow braids, her dress to clinging folds of dark green silk. A transparent veil covered her mouth and nose, fluttering slightly when she breathed. With a grimace, she added beads of green jade woven into the thin plaits. Should any of the Black Sisters be using their stolen Turangrial to enter the world of dreams and see her in the Panarch's palace, they would think her only a Tarabonner woman who had dreamed herself there in more ordinary fashion. Some knew her by sight, though. Lifting a handful of bead-strung braids, she smiled. Pale honey. She had not realized that was possible. I wonder what I look like. Could they still know me? Suddenly a tall stand mirror stood beside Kalendor. In the glass, her big brown eyes widened in shock. Her rosebud of a mouth fell open. She had Rendra's face. Her features flickered back and forth, eyes and hair flashing darker, then lighter. Straining, she settled them as the innkeeper's. No one would know her now, and Egwene thought she did not know how to be careful. Closing her eyes, she concentrated on Tanchico, on the Panarch's palace, on Need. Something dangerous to Rand, to the dragon reborn. Need. Around her, Tel-Iran Riod shifted. She felt it, a sliding lurch, and opened her eyes eagerly to see what she had found. It was a bedchamber, as big as any six at the Three Plum Court, the white plaster walls worked in painted friezes, golden lamps hanging from the ceiling by gilded chains. The tall posts of the bed spread carved limbs and leaves in a canopy above the mattresses. A woman well short of her middle years stood stiffly with her back to one of the posts at the foot of the bed. She was really quite lovely, in that pouty-mouthed way that Nynaeve herself had adopted. Atop her dark braids sat a crown of golden trefoil leaves among rubies and pearls, with a moonstone larger than a goose egg, and around her neck hung a broad stole, dangling to her knees and embroidered along its length with trees. Aside from crown and stole, she wore only a glistening coat of sweat. Her tremulous eyes were fixed on the woman lying at her ease on a low couch. The second woman's back was to Nynaeve, as misty as Egwene had been earlier. She was short and slight, dark hair flowing loose to her shoulders, wide-skirted gown of pale yellow silk, definitely not Tara Boner. Nynaeve did not have to see her face to know it had large blue eyes and a fox-like shape, or see the bonds of air holding the woman against the bedpost to know she was looking at Tamile Kinderoda.
"Learn so much when you use your dreams instead of wasting sleep," Tamile was saying with a Kyrianan accent, laughing. "Are you not enjoying yourself? What shall I teach you next? I know. I have loved 1,000 sailor men."
She waggled an admonishing finger.
"Be sure you learn all the words properly, Amethera. You know I would not want to... What are you gaping at?"
Abruptly, Nynaeve realized the woman against the bedpost, Amethera, the Panarch, was staring straight at her. Tamile shifted lazily as though to turn her head. Nynaeve clamped her eyes shut. Need. Shift. Letting herself sag against the narrow column, Nynaeve gulped air as if she had run 20 miles, not even wondering where she was. Her heart pounded like a wild drum. Speak of landing in a viper's den. Tamile Kinderode, the black sister Amiko had said enjoyed causing pain, enjoyed it enough to have made one of the black Aja comment, and her not able to channel a spark. She could have ended up decorating a bedpost beside Amethera. Light! She shivered, seeing it. Calm yourself, woman. You are out of there. And even if Tamile saw you, she saw a honey-haired woman who vanished, just a Tara Boner who dreamed herself into Tel Iron Riod for a moment. Surely Tamile could not have been aware of her long enough to sense she could channel. Even when she could not do it, the ability was there to be felt by one who shared it. Only a moment. Not long enough, with luck. At least she knew Amethera's situation now. The woman was certainly no ally of Tamile. This method of searching had already repaid use, but not enough, not yet. Controlling her breathing as best she could, she looked around. Rows of the thin white columns ran the length and breadth of a huge chamber, nearly as wide as it was long, with smooth polished white floorstones below and gilded bosses on the ceiling high above. A thick rope of white silk ran all the way around the room on waist-high posts of dark polished wood, except where it would have blocked the doorways with double-pointed arches. Stands and open cabinets lined the walls, and the bones of peculiar beasts with more display cases out in the floor also roped off. The main exhibition hall of the palace, from Egwene's description. What she sought must be in this very chamber. Her next step would not be as blind as the first. There were certainly no vipers, no Tamiles here. A handsome woman suddenly appeared beside a glass case with four carved legs out in the middle of the floor. She was no Tara Boner, with her dark hair falling in waves to her shoulders, yet that was not what made Nynaeve gape. The woman's dress seemed to be mist, sometimes silvery and opaque, sometimes gray and so thin as to show her limbs and body clearly. From wherever she had dreamed herself here, she assuredly had a vivid imagination to conceive that. Even the scandalous Damani dresses she had heard of surely could not equal this. The woman smiled at the glass case, then continued on up the hall, stopping on the far side to study something Nynaeve could not make out, something dark atop a white stone stand. Frowning, Nynaeve released her grip on a fistful of honey-colored braids. The woman would disappear at any moment. Few dreamed themselves into Tel Iron Riod for long. Of course, it did not matter if the woman saw her. She was certainly no one on their list of black sisters. and yet she seemed somehow... Nynaeve realized she had taken hold of a handful of braids again. The woman, of its own accord, her hand pulled, hard, and she stared at it in amazement. Her knuckles were white, her hand quivering. It was almost as if thinking of that woman, arm shaking, her hand tried to yank her hair out of her scalp. Why under the light? The mist-clad woman still stood in front of the distant white pedestal. Trembling spread from Nynaeve's arm into her shoulder. She had certainly never seen the woman before, and yet she tried to open her fingers. They only clamped down harder. Surely she never had. Shivering from head to toe, she hugged herself with the one arm she had free. Surely her teeth wanted to chatter. The woman seemed she wanted to weep. The woman... Images burst into her head, exploding. She slumped against the column beside her as if they had physical force. Her eyes bulged. She saw it again. The chamber of falling blossoms, and that sturdily handsome woman surrounded by the glow of Saidar. Herself and Elaine babbling like children, fighting to be first to answer, pouring out everything they knew. How much had they told? It was difficult to bring out details, but she dimly remembered keeping some things back. Not because she wanted to. She would have told the woman anything, done anything she asked. Her face heated with shame and anger. If she had managed to hide any scraps, it was only because she had been so eager to answer the last question asked that she passed over earlier. "It makes no sense," a small voice said in the back of her head. "If she's a black sister I don't know about, why did she not hand us over to Leandrin? She could have. We'd have gone with her like lambs." Cold rage would not let her listen. A black sister had made her dance like a puppet and then told her to forget, ordered her to forget, and she had. Well, now the woman would find out what it was like to face her ready and forewarned. Before she could reach for the true source, Birgitta was suddenly beside the next column in that short white coat and wide yellow trousers gathered at the ankle. Birgitta, or some woman dreaming she was Birgitta, with golden hair in an elaborate braid. A warning finger pressed against her lips, she pointed at Nynaeve, then urgently toward one of the double-arched doorways behind them. Bright blue eyes compelling, she vanished. Nynaeve shook her head. Whoever the woman was, she had no time. Opening herself to Saidar, she turned, filled to overflowing with the one power and righteous wrath. The woman clothed in mist was gone. Gone! Because that golden-haired fool had distracted her. Perhaps that one was still about, waiting for her. Wrapped in the power, she strode through the doorway the woman had indicated. The golden-haired woman was waiting in a brightly carpeted hallway where unlit golden lamps gave off the scent of perfumed oil. She held a silver bow now, and a quiver of silver arrows hung at her waist. "Who are you?" Nynaeve demanded furiously. She would give the woman a chance to explain herself, and then teach her a lesson she would not soon forget. "Are you the same fool who shot at me in the waist, claiming she was Birgitta? I was about to teach a member of the Black Adja manners when you let her get away." "I am Birgitta," the woman said, leaning on her bow. "At least, that is the name you would know. And the lesson might have been yours, here as surely as in the Threefold Land. I remember the lives I have lived as if they were books well read, the longer gone dimmer than the nearer. But I remember well when I fought at Luz Theron's side. I will never forget Mogadine's face any more than I will forget the face of Asmodeon, the man you almost disturbed at Roydeon." Asmodeon? Mogadine? That woman was one of the Forsaken? A Forsaken in Tanchico, and one in Roydeon, in the Waste. Egwene would certainly have said something if she knew. No way to warn her, not for 7 days. Anger and Saidar surged in her. "What are you doing here? I know that you all vanished after the Horn of Valir called you, but you were..." She trailed off, a trifle flustered at what she had been about to say, but the other woman calmly finished for her. "Dead? Those of us who are bound to the wheel are not dead as others are dead. Where better for us to wait until the wheel weaves us out in new lives than in the world of dreams? Birgitta laughed suddenly. I begin to talk as if I were a philosopher. In almost every life I can remember, I was born a simple girl who took up the bow. I am an archer, no more. You're the heroine of 100 tales, Nynaeve said, and I saw what your arrows did at Falma. Seanchan channeling did not touch you. Birgitta, we face near a dozen of the Black Aja, and one of the Forsaken as well, it seems. We could use your help. The other woman grimaced, embarrassed and regretful. I cannot, Nynaeve. I cannot touch the world of flesh unless the horn calls me again, or else the wheel weaves me out. If it did this moment, you would find only an infant mewling at her mother's breast. As for Falma, the horn had called us. We were not there as you were, in the flesh. That is why the power could not touch us. Here all is part of the dream, and the one power could destroy me as easily as you, more easily. I told you, I am an archer, a sometimes soldier, no more. Her complex golden braid swung as she shook her head. I do not know why I am explaining. I should not even be talking to you. Why not? You've spoken to me before, and Egwene thought she saw you. That was you, wasn't it? Nynaeve frowned. How do you know my name? Do you just know things? I know what I see and hear. I have watched you and listened whenever I could find you. You and the other two women and the young man with his wolves. According to the precepts, we may speak to none who know they are in Tel Iron Riod. And yet evil walks the dream as well as the world of flesh. You who fight it attract me. Even knowing I can do almost nothing, I find myself wanting to help you. But I cannot. It violates the precepts which have held me for so many turns of the wheel that in my oldest, faintest memories I know I had already lived 100 times, or 1,000. Speaking to you violates precepts as strong as law.
It does, said a harsh male voice.
Nynaeve jumped and almost lashed out with the power. The man was dark and strongly muscled, with the long hilts of two swords thrusting above his shoulders as he strode the few paces from where he had appeared to Birgitta. With what she had heard from Birgitta, the swords were enough to name him as Gadel Kane, but where fair, golden-haired Birgitta was as beautiful as in the stories, he was definitely not. In fact, he was perhaps as ugly a man as Nynaeve had ever seen, his face wide and flat, his heavy nose too big, and his mouth a gash, far too broad. Birgitta smiled at him, though. Her touch on his cheek held more than fondness. It was a surprise to see he was the shorter. Stocky and muscled as he was, powerful in his movements, he gave the impression of being taller than he was. We have almost always been linked, Birgitta told Nynaeve without taking her eyes from Cain's. He is usually born well before me, so I know my time approaches again when I cannot find him, and I usually hate him at first sight in the flesh, but we nearly always end lovers or wed. A simple story, but I think we have spun it out in 1,000 variations. Cain ignored Nynaeve as though she did not exist.
The precepts exist for a reason, Birgitta. Nothing but strife and trouble has ever come from breaking them.
His voice was indeed harsh, Nynaeve realized, not at all like that of the man in the stories. Perhaps I cannot sit by while evil fights, Birgitta said quietly, or perhaps I simply hunger for the flesh again. It has been long since we were born last. The shadow rises again, Gadel. It rises here. We must fight it. That is the reason we were bound to the wheel.
When the horn calls us, we will fight. When the wheel weaves us, we will fight. Not until then.
He glowered at her.
Have you forgotten what Mogadin promised you when we followed Luz Theron? I saw her, Birgitta. She will know you here.
Birgitta turned to Nynaeve. I will aid you as I can, but do not expect too much. Tel Iron Riod is the whole of my world, and I can do less here than you. Nynaeve blinked. The dark, heavy man had not moved that she had seen, but he suddenly stood 2 paces away, drawing a honing stone along one of his swords with a soft, silky rasp. Plainly, as far as he was concerned, Birgitta was speaking to the air.
What can you tell of Mogadine, Birgitta? I must know what I can to face her.
Leaning on her bow, Birgitta frowned thoughtfully.
Facing Mogadine is difficult, and not only because she is forsaken. She hides and takes no risks. She attacks only where she sees weakness and moves only in shadows. If she fears defeat, she will run. She is not one to fight to the last, even when doing so has the chance of victory. A chance is not enough for Mogadine, but do not take her lightly. She is a serpent coiled in high grass, waiting her own moment to strike, with less compassion than the snake. Especially here, do not take her lightly. Lanfear always claimed Telairun Riad for her own, but Mogadine could do things here far beyond Lanfear, though she has not Lanfear's strength in the world of flesh. I think she would not take the risk of confronting Lanfear.
Nynaeve shivered, fear warring with the anger that let her contain the power. Mogadine, Lanfear. This woman spoke so casually of the Forsaken.
Birgitta, what did Mogadine promise you?
She knew what I was, even though I did not. How, I do not know. Birgitta glanced at Cain. He appeared absorbed in his sword, but she lowered her voice anyway. She promised to make me weep alone for as long as the wheel turns. She said it as a fact that simply had not happened yet.
And yet, you are willing to help.
As I can, Nynaeve. Remember that I told you not to expect too much. Once more, she looked at the man sharpening his sword.
We will meet again, Nynaeve, if you are careful and survive.
Hefting her silver bow, she went to put an arm around Cain's shoulders and murmur in his ear. Whatever she said, Cain was laughing as they vanished. Nynaeve shook her head. Careful. Everybody was telling her to be careful. A legendary hero who said she would help, only there was not much she could do. And one of the Forsaken in Tanchico. The thought of Mogadine, of what the woman had done to her, strengthened her anger until the one power pulsed in her like the sun. Abruptly, she was back in the great hall where she had been standing before, almost hoping the woman had returned. But the hall was empty of life except for herself. Fury and the power roared through her till she thought her skin would crisp and blacken. Mogadine, or any of the Black Sisters, could sense her far more easily holding the power than without, but she held it anyway. She almost wanted them to find her so she could strike at them. Tamile was very likely still in Telairun Riad. If she went back up to that bedchamber, she could settle Tamile once and for all. She could settle Tamile and warn the rest. It was enough to make her growl. What had Mogadine been smiling at? Striding out to the case, a wide glass box atop a carved table, she peered in. 6 mismatched figurines stood in a circle beneath the glass. A foot-tall nude woman balanced on the toes of one foot, dancing, all flowing lines, and a shepherdess less than half as large, playing the pipes with his crook on his shoulder and a sheep at his feet, were as similar as any two. She had no doubt what had attracted the Forsaken's smile, though. In the center of the circle, a red-lacquered wooden stand held a disc as big as a man's hand, divided into halves by a sinuous line, one side gleaming whiter than snow, the other blacker than pitch. It was made of Quendiyar, she knew. She had seen its like, and only 7 had ever been made. One of the seals on the Dark One's prison, a focus for one of the locks that held him away from the world in Shael Ghul. This was perhaps as important a discovery as whatever it was that threatened Rand. This had to be gotten away from the Black Aja. Suddenly she became aware of her reflection. The top of the case was the finest glass, without bubbles, and gave an image as clear as a mirror, if fainter. Dark green folds of silk draped her body so they showed every curve of breast and hip and thigh, Long honey braids full of jade beads framed a face with big brown eyes and a pouting mouth. The glow of Sidar did not show, of course. Disguised, so she did not even know herself, she walked about carrying a painted sign that screamed Aes Sedai. "I can be careful," she muttered. Yet she held on a moment longer. The power filling her was like life bubbling along her limbs, all the pleasures she had ever known seeping through her flesh. In the end, feeling foolish took enough edge from her anger to allow her to let go. Or maybe it dulled her anger to where she could no longer hold on. Whatever the reason, it did not help her search. What she was after had to be somewhere in this huge hall among all these displays. Pulling her eyes away from what looked like the bones of a toothy lizard 10 paces long, she closed them. Need. Danger to the dragon reborn. To Rand. Need. Shift. She was standing inside the white silk rope along the walls, the edge of a white stone pedestal touching her dress. What lay on top did not look very dangerous at first glance, a necklace and 2 bracelets of jointed black metal, but she could come no closer to anything than this. Not without sitting on it, she thought wryly. She jerked her hand out to touch it. Pain, sorrow, suffering, and jerked it back, gasping, the raw emotion still echoing in her head. Even her faint doubts vanished. This was what the Black Aja was hunting. And if it still sat on this pedestal in Tel Iron Riad, it sat there in the waking world, too. She had beaten them. This white stone pedestal. Whirling around, she stared toward the glass case that held the Quaendiyar seal, located the place she had been standing when she first saw Mogadine. The woman had been looking at this pedestal, at the bracelets and collar. Mogadine had to know, but everything around her spun and blurred, fading. "Wake up, Nynaeve," Elaine muttered, suppressing a yawn as she shook the sleeping woman's shoulder. "It has to be an hour by now. I want some sleep, too. Wake up, or I'll see how you like your head in a bucket of water." Nynaeve's eyes popped open, staring up at her. "If she knows what it is, why hasn't she given it to them? If they know who she is, why does she have to look at it in Tel Iron Riad? Is she hiding from them, too?"
"What are you talking about?"
Braids tossing about as she wriggled up to sit with her back against the head of the bed, Nynaeve jerked her silk shift down. "I will tell you what I am talking about." Elaine's mouth fell open as Nynaeve unfolded the tale of what her meeting with Egwene had become. Searching with Need, Mogadine, Birgitta and Gadel Kane, the black metal necklace and bracelets, Asmodeon in the waist, one of the seals on the Dark One's prison in the Panarch's palace. Elaine sank down weakly onto the side of the mattress long before Nynaeve came to Tamile and the Panarch, thrown in almost as an afterthought, and changing her appearance, masquerading as Rendra. If Nynaeve's face had not been grimly serious, Elaine could have thought it one of Tom's wilder stories. Egyanin, sitting up cross-legged in her linen shift, hands on knees, looked close to disbelieving. Elaine hoped Nynaeve did not start a row because she had loosed the woman's wrists. Mokadine, that was the most horrifying part. One of the Forsaken in Tanchico. One of the Forsaken weaving the power around the two of them, making them tell her everything. Elaine could not remember a bit of it. The thought was enough to press both her hands to a suddenly queasy stomach.
"I don't know whether Mogadine light. Could she really have just walked in and made us?
Is hiding from Leandrin and the others, Nynaeve? It sounds what Birgitta light. Birgitta giving her advice," said of her.
"Whatever Mogadine is up to," Nynaeve said in a tight voice, "I mean to pick a bone clean with her."
She slumped back against the flower-carved headboard. "In any case, we have to get the seal away from them as well as this necklace and bracelets."
Elaine shook her head. "How can jewelry be dangerous to Rand? Are you sure? Are they a Turangrial of some sort? What did they look like exactly?"
"They looked like a necklace and bracelets," Nynaeve snapped in exasperation. two jointed bracelets made of some black metal, and a wide necklace like a black collar. Her eyes darted to Egyanen, but no faster than Elaine's. Unperturbed, the dark-haired woman knelt up to sit on her heels.
I have never heard of an idom made for a man, or any like the one you describe. No one tries to control a man who can channel.
That is exactly what this is for, Elaine said slowly.
Oh, light, I suppose I was hoping it didn't exist.
At least Nynaeve had found it first. At least they had a chance to stop it being used against Rand. Nynaeve's eyes narrowed as she took in Egyanen's free hands, but she did not mention them. Mogadin must be the only one who knows. It makes no sense otherwise. If we can find a way into the palace, we can take the seal and the whatever it is. And if we can bring Amathera out as well, Leandrin and her cronies will find the Panarch's Legion and the Civil Watch and maybe the White Cloaks closing in. They'll not all be able to channel their way out of that. The problem is getting inside undetected.
I have had a few thoughts on that, Elaine told her, but I fear the men are going to give us difficulties over it.
You leave them to me, Nynaeve snorted. A thumping clatter rose in the hall. A man shouted. As quickly as it began, silence fell once more. Tom was on watch out there. Elaine darted to pull open the door, embracing Sidar as she rushed out, but Nynaeve scrambled off the bed right behind her, Egyanen as well. Tom was just picking himself up off the floor, a hand to his head. Juelin with his staff and Bael Domon with his cudgel stood over a man with pale yellow hair, lying face down on the floor, unconscious. Elaine hurried to Tom, trying gently to help him up. He gave her a grateful smile, but stubbornly pushed her hands away.
I am quite all right, child.
All right? A knot was rising on his temple.
The fellow was walking down the hall when suddenly he kicked me in the head. After my purse, I suppose.
Just like that. Kicked in the head and he was all right.
He would have had it, too, Juelin said, if I had not come to see if Tom wanted a relief.
Did I not decide?
Domon muttered. Their hostility seemed less focused for a change. It took Elaine only a moment to realize why. Nynaeve and Egyanen were in the hall in their shifts. Juelin was eyeing them both in an approving manner that would have caused trouble if Rendra had seen it, though he was at least trying not to be obvious. Domon made no effort at all to hide his frank appraisal of Egyanen, crossing his arms and pursing his lips in disgusting fashion while looking her up and down. The situation dawned on the other women quickly, but their reactions were quite different. Nynaeve, in her thin white silk, gave the thief-catcher a flat stare and strode stiffly into the room, poking a somewhat flushed face back around the side of the doorframe. Egyanen, whose linen shift was considerably longer and thicker than Nynaeve's, Egyanen, who had been cool serenity while being made prisoner, who fought like a warder, Egyanen went wide-eyed and crimson-faced, gasping in horror. Elaine stared, amazed, as the Seanchan woman gave a mortified shriek and leaped back inside. Doors flung open and down the hall heads popped out. They vanished instantly to the bang of slamming doors at the sight of a man stretched out on the floor and others standing over him. Heavy dragging noises suggested people blocking themselves in with beds or wardrobes. Long moments later, Egyanen finally peeked out opposite Nynaeve, still scarlet to her hair. Elaine really did not understand. The woman was in her shift, true, but it covered her very nearly as well as Elaine's Taraboner dress did. Still, Juelin and Domon had no right to ogle. She fixed the pair with a stare that should have set them to rights immediately. Unfortunately, Domon was too busy chuckling and rubbing his upper lip to notice. At least Juelin saw, even if he did sigh heavily the way men did when they considered themselves put upon unfairly. Avoiding her eyes, he bent to heave the pale-haired fellow onto his back, a handsome enough man, slender.
I know this fellow, Juelin exclaimed. This is the man who tried to rob me. Or so I thought, he added more slowly.
I do not believe in coincidence, not unless the dragon reborn is in the city. Elaine exchanged frowns with Nynaeve. Surely the stranger was not in the employ of Leandrin. The Black Aja would not use men to sneak about the halls any more than they would have hired street toughs. Elaine moved her gaze to Egyanin questioningly. Nynaeve's was more demanding.
"He is Seanchan," Egyanin said after a moment.
"A rescue attempt?" Nynaeve murmured dryly, but the other woman shook her head.
"I do not doubt he was looking for me, but not for rescue, I think. If he knows, or even suspects, that I let Bethamin go free, he would be wanting to talk with me."
Elaine suspected it was rather more than talk, confirmed when Egyanin added,
"It might be best if you slit his throat. He may try to make trouble for you, too, if he thinks you are my friends, or if he discovers you are Aes Sedai."
The big Ilianer smuggler gave her a shocked look, and Julin's jaw dropped almost to his chest. Tom, on the other hand, nodded in a disturbingly thoughtful fashion.
"We are not here to slit Seanchan throats," Nynaeve said, as though that might change later.
"Bail, Julin, put him out in the alley behind the inn. By the time he wakes, he'll be lucky to have his small clothes. Tom, find Rendra and tell her we want strong tea in the Chamber of Falling Blossoms. And ask if she has any willow bark or acorn. I will make you something for your head." The three men stared at her.
"Well, move," she snapped. "We have plans to make."
She barely gave Elaine time to get back inside before closing the door with a bang and beginning to pull her dress over her head. Egyanin scrambled into hers as though the men were still looking at her.
"The better way is to ignore them, Egyanin," Elaine said.
It was odd to be advising someone older than Nynaeve, but however competent the Seanchan woman was in other ways, she clearly knew little about men.
"It only encourages them otherwise. I do not know why," she admitted, "but it does. You were quite decently covered, really."
Egyanin's head pushed out at the top of her dress.
"Decent? I am not a serving girl. I am no shay dancer."
Her scowl became a perplexed frown.
"He is rather good-looking, though. I had not thought him so before."
Wondering what a shay dancer was, Elaine went to help her with her buttons. "Rendra will have something to say to you if you allow Julin to flirt with you." The dark-haired woman gave her a startled look over her shoulder.
"The thief-catcher? It was Bael Domon I meant. A properly set-up man. But a smuggler," she sighed regretfully. "A lawbreaker."
Elaine supposed there was no accounting for tastes. Nynaeve certainly loved Lan, and he was much too stone-faced and intimidating. But Bael Domon? The man was half as wide as he was tall, as thick as an ogier.
"You chatter like Rendra, Elaine," Nynaeve snapped. She was struggling to do up her dress, both hands behind her.
"If you have finished blathering about men, perhaps you won't mind skipping over the new seamstress you've no doubt found. We must make plans. If we wait until we're with the men, they will try to take it over, and I am in no mood to waste time putting them in their place. Have you finished with her yet? I could use some help myself."
Quickly fastening Egyanin's last small button, Elaine went coolly to Nynaeve. She did not talk about men and dresses. Not nearly as much as Rendra. Holding her braids out of the way, Nynaeve gave her a frown when she tugged sharply at the other woman's dress to do up the buttons. The close-spaced triple row up the back was necessary, not simply ornament. Nynaeve would let Rendra talk her into the most fashionably tight bodices, and then say other people spent all their time thinking about clothes. She certainly thought of other things.
"I have been thinking how we can move inside the palace unnoticed, Nynaeve. We can be all but invisible."
As she talked, Nynaeve's frowns smoothed out. Nynaeve herself had conceived a way to enter the palace. When Egyanin made a few suggestions, Nynaeve's mouth tightened, but the notions were sensible, and even Nynaeve could not reject them out of hand. By the time they were ready to go down to the Chamber of Falling Blossoms,
they had a plan agreed upon, and no intention of letting the men change a whit of it. Mogadin, the Black Aja, whoever were running things in the Panarch's palace, were going to lose their prizes before they knew what had happened.